This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, welcome. Carm Capriotto here with a very special re-release of a remarkable results podcast from November 2016. Yes, it was about a year and a half into my podcasting journey when I met Giuliano Zaccato in Las Vegas. This is a very special and interesting story and a very interesting person. Every time I tell this story, I get emotional for so many reasons. Our story is very unique and transcends over a few years. Now, thank you for your continued support as a podcast subscriber. Give us a like and a five-star review if you can. And also thanks to our partner, Napa Auto Care. You know, it's no secret that we're facing a technician shortage, but rest assured, Napa Auto Care is addressing that one tech at a time with your help. The free two-year apprentice program offers a variety of training to produce a technician through 9 stages of curriculum, earning 4 ASE certifications throughout the program. To learn more, members can visit member.napaautocare.com or contact your servicing Napa Auto Parts store or sales rep. You know, I decided to relaunch this episode with Giuliano because of the unique story that sits behind the Mustang Man. But also, when I tell this story to people when I'm at conferences, I always say that I should re-release this episode, and so now I have. So I met Giuliano at an AVI luncheon at the Apex 2016. He told his story about working in the design studio at Ford with a team of clay sculptors who helped bring the iconic 64 Mustang to life. Now, I thought about his story and I realized we needed to tell it. We became friends and he agreed. Giuliano Zaccato, at the time of this interview, was a spirited 84-year-old, and he weaves this incredible story as a young man emigrating from Italy to Canada and being faced with a very serious illness that ultimately changed his destiny. His tenacity to practice his craft got him a shot at Ford. Giuliano brings you inside the Ford design studio. He shares his memories of Henry Ford II, Lee Iacocca, and other project leaders, designers, and sketch artists. It was a team effort, and you'll get a sense of how it all came together. Listen to Giuliano speak to the talent of the sculptors as they took the engineering drawings, sketches, and design, and they brought it into 2 dimensions and turned them into a 3-dimensional model. Now, Giuliano and I became close. After the interview, we spoke weekly. He had more energy than most 60-year-olds at the age of 84. And he shared with me his ideas and goals about how to tell his Mustang Man story. Hear his spirit, many and unending ideas, his positivity, drive, and courage, and his need to inspire through storytelling. You'll hear all that in the episode. Now, one day in 2017, he called me from Florida. His home's in Detroit. He was out at a Mustang Club event signing autographs, and he was with his people. He told me, "Hey, Carm, I'm not feeling well," and I was heading home. Soon after, Giuliano discovered he had glioblastoma stage 4. Needless to say, I was crushed for him and his many fans because he had plans to travel Route 66, write a musical called The Mustang Man, and so many other projects he just couldn't get done. You'll hear about his dreams in this episode. Knowing his time was short, I went to his home to record our second episode. He was challenged with chemo. However, after hours of working on the episode together, we got it done. And he talked about his work on the Chrysler Crossfire at a castle in Italy and his Horse of Destiny Foundation he speaks to a lot. You'll find that interview on our website, remarkableresults.biz, episode 243. I'll put the link in the show notes for you. Knowing what the ultimate outcome was going to be, it was one of the hardest interviews I did at Giuliano's home. He was able to celebrate his 85th birthday before he passed. In 2017, I submitted this Giuliano 64 Mustang interview to the Motor Press Guild, and I won the top podcast of that year. Ann and I went to the presentation at the Peterson Museum in LA to receive the award. Listen to Giuliano's story from woodworking to emigrating to Canada, getting tuberculosis of the bone, and discovering his ability to sculpt. Listen to his tenacity to find work in Detroit and his brilliant mind as he dreamed of XY digital printing back in the day, which now today we call 3D printing. Even if you're not a car buff or a collector, you'll enjoy hearing the story of a man and his role in creating one of the most important vehicle icons of our lifetime. Take this walk with me down my memory lane and learn about Giuliano's legacy with the iconic 64 Mustang. Enjoy. Giuliano, you spoke at a luncheon and you told your story. And I knew right then that you needed to share this great story with the Remarkable Results Radio podcast listeners. I walked up to you and I said, hey, would you please sign your press picture? And you did. And then I went up to you. I gave you my business card and said, sir, boy, would I love to do an interview with you. And you looked at me and you said, what's a podcast? And I said, I'll explain in a minute. Let's just get together and talk. So here we are. I am honored because you're one of six clay design modelers who crafted the original 1964 Ford Mustang.
There were sometimes eight or 10, depends, you know, where we were with the design of it. So it was not just six. It could have been eight or more. Okay.
I can't wait to hear about it. And you have such an interesting story coming over from Italy at such a young age. Tell us about it.
Well, I left this river town north of Venice, Italy. It's a beautiful town, a river town surrounded by the beauty of the Alps and the Adriatic Sea. It was 1952, and in Italy, still things were not economically very good. So the family decided to leave and go to Canada. We could not directly come to the United States because for Italians at that time, there was a quota, a waiting list for 10 years for Italians.
Oh my.
Yes. And you had to have a blood relative, you know, to come here.
Okay.
So we left the family, five of us went to Windsor, Canada. And our skills there were in woodworking, design. We designed and built the furniture in Italy.
Okay.
With our own shop.
Yeah.
We came from a line of woodworkers. All my ancestry were in woodworkers. We can go for a long time, talk about my life, my first two decades in Italy, which were during the war. The war was ended. I was 14. And so I remember very well. I could tell you many stories, but
let me stop you and let me ask about the story when you saw the B-52s fly overhead on their way to Germany and you saw the P-51 Mustang. That was a great story.
In 1943, Italy abdicated the war and went on the side of the Allies. The Americans, Allies, already were setting up bases in Italy. And they were now really hitting Germany pretty hard. And they would fly over the skies of our town, my town. They would actually fill the skies with these. They weren't B-52. I forgot whether they were probably 17. But anyhow, they were large bombers flying over our skies going to Germany. And I like to say, to say hello to the other guy.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Amongst those planes, they were these P-51 Mustangs. They were the one to protect the big bombers from attack, being attacked. And one Sunday afternoon on the way back from Germany, one of the bombers was flying very low and smoking. And he got hit pretty bad. One brave, actually foolish German flyer went up with a small reconnaissance plane, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Just had an automatic rifle, and he started hitting on the bomber. Well, soon enough, two of the P-51 came down from the sky and engaged them and turned them into a ball of fire. But little did I know then that the P-51 would come back into my life many years later.
So you came to Windsor, Canada, and I have relatives that came from the old country that came to Ottawa, actually, to Canada. Uh-huh. Seemed to be the easier way to get here. And then you got sick.
I started developing a pain on my left leg and back lower spine. It took 10 months to discover that I had tuberculosis of the bone. Then shortly they put me into a sanitarium. At that time, they cured tuberculosis of the bone by immobilizing the area, which is the joint of the spine to the pelvis. and I was cured with streptomycin and penicillin at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed in that body cast for 18 months in a sanitarium in Windsor, Canada. I could not speak very well, but, you know, I got by.
Okay.
I was already 10 months I've been in Canada going from doctor to doctor. So I wasn't in this hospital. It was taken care of completely by the Canadian government to the point where I got out. For a year, they gave me a salary, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, I got a check every month. And then they helped me find a job. You know, how can you dream of anything more beautiful than that?
Well, interesting. But that's when you discovered your talent.
Yeah. So, as I was laying in this body cast, I could not turn around. I could move my knees a little bit, yes. I was encouraged to remain. Well, I couldn't move anyhow, so I couldn't turn over. You know, like if you want to fall asleep, you find a place to, you know, I couldn't do that. So I resorted to do this. Take the pillow, because I could move my arms, and put it on top of my face and convince myself that I was sleeping on my tummy. That I was laying on that pillow and I would fall asleep. There were many other inconveniences. I don't want to go into this now. The hardest part of the 18 months was really retaining my sanity, because the body, after a while, gets adjusted, believe it or not, to be immobilized. We had no air conditioning. So imagine that on that body cast. From below my arms or on my knees, I had four body casts. And then eventually, when I got surgery, then which was the last cast, they had it on my right leg, I think. They had it all the way down to my foot. I was having a rough time. I was beginning to read books. The first book that I could really understand was The Caine Mutiny by Harmon Brook. I don't know if you heard of the Caine.
Sure have.
They made a movie out of that too.
Mm-hmm.
One day, I don't know what happened, but I found myself carving the profile of Lincoln off a penny on a bar of soap. From there, then people said, why don't you try clay? So I did that. They gave me a book about sculpting, and they gave me clay. But I imagine that I was doing all of this by laying the clay on top of my chest, and most of it to look in the mirror, because I couldn't see the top of my sculpture, so I had to do it a lot of in reverse.
Well, that had to require an awful lot of talent to do that.
Well,
wow.
A lot of it was desperation, really. You know, and the talent is, if you work hard enough, I think everybody's got talent. The picture I did was just a small bust, probably half size. And it was a picture were taken, and they put it in the Windsor Star, the local paper. There was a sculptress there that saw it, came over and visited me. And she says, you have some talent. And what are you thinking of doing when you get out of the hospital? I said, well, my skills are in woodworking. I suppose I'd go back to that cabinetry. Well, she says, maybe you should look at car design. And I said, what do you mean? Well, he said, they do full-size clay models of cars. Oh, really? So I said, well, I'll keep that in mind. And when I got out, and it took a year before I could really look for work, I soon discovered that there were no design studios in Windsor, Canada. They were all in the United States, which was across the river. And, of course, I discovered again that I could not go to the United States because I had to wait 10 years. But I also discovered that there was a first preference set up by the U.S. Government where you could enter in a shorter time if they felt that you could be of value to the country. So I hired an attorney, actually, an immigration attorney, and he walked me through all that was the process that took 8 months, and had to have permission from Washington, first of all, to qualify for that. So the story goes on, and in 8 months now, I am in the United States. And my first job was working for Thanksgiving Parade, doing busts for the parade. From there, I went to a engraving company. And one day, I was looking out of the window. I had my workbench, and I kept looking at this tower. And so one lunch, I said, let me just walk over there and see what is that tower, you know. And what I said on the tower is American Motors. I said, oh, they do clay models in there.
I would imagine, yes. Yeah.
And so I walked in, and I asked the secretary if I could speak to someone because I wanted to be a clay modeler. And she says, do you have an appointment? No. I said, I don't know anybody. So she broke with protocol and called the head person in clay modeling, and his name is Ron Martin.
Okay.
He said, I just had a layoff. If I didn't have I said, I would try, you know, because I see you have the desire to learn. So he says, would you mind working in a plaster shop, you know, where we make molds of the models and that, you know, from the clay? I said, anything. But he said, my father, George Martin, he leads the plaster shops at Ford Motor Company Design Center. He says, I'll talk to him. And so I got invited to go to the design center. And I brought some picture of the sculpture that I did after I left the hospital. And he looked at that, and he says, well, I actually brought with him two managers of clay modeling department, the Stober's brother, very famous. So they look at my work, and they said, what experience do you have in clay modeling cars? I said, none, but I'm willing to learn. Well, they kind of shook their head. They said, well, George, you see what you can do with him, and they left. So George said, I see that you really want to learn. Why don't you start off in the shop with me? And he said, when can you come? Well, I could come tomorrow, but first I should give 2 weeks' notice to the shop that I'm working now. He said, fine, when you're ready, give me a call, and then you come in. He says, I just couldn't believe it, you know, that Ford Motor Company is this forbidden city, you know, that I was entering. So I went back to the shop, and I told the owner. He didn't even let me finish. He says, you have an offer to go and work at the design center of Ford Motor Company, and you give him 2 weeks? He says, take your toolbox and go now. Go now. If you have any problem, you can come back. So that's how I started working at it was 1957, and I was in the shop for a year and a half. Then I moved on into the clay modeling department, and they showed me how to make the tools, because those days you cannot buy modeling tools. We made our own. So that was the first thing. They showed me how to make my tools, so they were very gracious and everything. And then I just started working mostly on full-size bodies. And that, in those days, of course, we had no computer or anything. The skill they were sought after were a clay sculptor. They could interpret a sketch and imagine the third dimension.
Yes.
And create the theme. Okay, so it was all done by hand. Our tools were a bandsaw, workbench, and a clay oven. And a measuring device called the bridge, which would roll up and down around the clay model to put information in and also to take information out. And so that was the setting for 1962 when we began working on the Mustang, on the 64 Mustang.
A reality of doing business today is facing a technician shortage, and NAPA Auto Care is a free solution with the NAPA Auto Care Apprentice Program.
The program was pioneered by one of our own, Pete McNeil, and master technician Jake Sorensen from McNeil's Auto Care in Sandy, Utah, and they realized that the problem of not having technicians available for hire was not going to solve itself and decided to take action. A focus was put on younger individuals with the right passion, desire, aptitude, and attitude to work in the automotive repair industry. Jake and Pete sought after these individuals and developed a technician apprentice program to give them the training needed to become a successful technician in today's world. The NAPA Auto Care Apprentice Program includes a comprehensive 9-stage curriculum that includes a variety of types of training, including exclusive in-depth classroom training videos, instructor-led NAPA Auto Tech classes, web-based Auto Tech e-learning courses, and practice skills with hands-on learning in the shop with the guidance of a mentor. The apprentice program curriculum is competency-based, meaning an apprentice can move through each stage at a pace that best suits them. Most apprentices complete the program within 2 years, and upon completion, apprentices will have earned 4 ASE certifications, G1, A4, A5, and AC certifications, adding industry validation to the skills an apprentice acquires. Apprentice graduates are also registered with the Department of Labor as Journey Worker Automotive Technicians. Having an apprentice in your shop will ultimately benefit your shop as they advance through the program. In most cases, as the apprentice develops their skill set producing billable hours, you'll see a growth in your gross profit by stage 5. One of the largest entry barriers for individuals looking to enter the automotive repair industry is the cost of tools. To keep your apprentice motivated, they receive an apprentice toolkit, including a 4-drawer tool cart for all registered apprentices. Together, NAPA Auto Care and your shop can fix the technician shortage. Start now, grow your own, and build your bench. Our future technicians can come from our concentrated efforts, and it's free. Contact your NAPA representative to learn more or log in to member.napaautocare.com or contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store's sales representative. Giuliano, it was codenamed Allegro.
What I remember was filling out the cards, because we had to put in a time card. Each model we made had a name. I had to have a name. And I remember that it said Allegro. It was one of the names actually that was ultimately considered amongst Henry Ford before the T-Bird 2. And it was the Cougar. So they were this series of names.
Yeah, they even considered Torino as one of the names.
Yes. Yeah. So they, you know, people put in, and there was a chief designer, his name was John Nasier. He loved airplanes, and he thought of a P-51 Mustang. And I remember one of the designers, Gib Guyberson, was sketching that as a logo, you know, but of course, became to the point where the Mustang horse, really, that's where the name came from, you know. You know, in a design center, people make proposals of all kinds, you know. So let's just say that the name derived from a horse.
Giuliano, take us inside the design center that you were using hot clay at 120 degrees.
Yes. So the design center for Motor Company is built in the early 50s, and it employed like 1,000 people. And had several studios for different car lines. 3 of the studios were got into the program of designing this new spirited young sporty car.
Mm-hmm.
I work in one studio, then I work in another studio. As a clay sculptor, we move about depending where the need is. Sometimes overtime, we move to another studio. After several weeks of showing models, Mr. Ford, Henry Ford II, said, I'm sorry, you guys are showing me the same thing over and over again. Well, that's understandable because in a creative world, sometimes you can dry up. You're just so much in and you can't think of nothing else, you know. So this was a responsibility of the designer. The studio had like 2 or 3 designers. And the studio that the Mustang was designed, I think there were 2 designers, chief designer, 6 to 8 modelers, and a layout engineer, they call it, the layout man. In the studio itself, the door that led into the studio had no name on it, and that's where the Mustang was to be born. And under Joe Oros was the director of the studio. Gail Alderman was the one that did the sketch. They gave the Mustang its identity. So how was the 64 Mustang designed? We had a structure with four wheels and wood and foam to get approximately to the shape, you know, size. Points were put in with the clay. Now, the clay we talked about is they call it industrial clay, and it's a base of wax oil. It's a kind of a secret formula. It comes in billets, and it's put into an oven with drawers, you know, like a food zone. It was heated up to like 120, sometime more. The first application, it needs to be pretty hot and very pliable. So we would add it on with gloves first to get the base. Then when we got closer to getting the design into it, then the temperature would be a bit lower. But regardless, many times you get so excited, you get working. Pretty soon you'll find yourself with blisters in your hand, actually, and then the blister bust. And like I said, I'm sure the sum of my skin was embedded in that clay. So it was for some very exciting times. The way it started, Joe Oros said to Gail Alderman, I need some fresh sketches, you know. And Gail Alderman said, I'm really very busy, Joe, I can't do it. Well, if we knew Joe, he wouldn't take no for an answer. He said, I don't care, but you got to do it. So Gail Alderman went home at 11 o'clock at night. He did several sketches in the morning. Joe Oros picked two, and he says, I'll run the passenger side and you run the driver's side. Meaning by running is I'll direct the sculptors, you know, with lines and shapes, and that's the way it worked. Well, that was presented to Lee Iacocca. And Lee Iacocca liked the driver's side, and that's how the design was selected. But I like to say kind of humorous little story where when Iacocca liked something with his present cigar in his mouth, he would kind of roll it, you know, and then his cigar would light up. And then we knew that he liked
And he has been called the father of the Mustang.
He was called the father of the Mustang because he stuck his neck out with Ford. And he kept trying several times. And Ford keeps saying, no, we just lost a lot of money with the Edsel. And I'm not going to take another chance. But finally, the story goes, you know, I mean, sometimes I talk about what I heard, what you hear in there is that what really got him is the word, the name Mustang. And because before that, he never named for the project, you know. Anyhow, the model was, we worked, I always like to say this, that as we work on our knees and our back 13 hours a day, maybe more sometimes. I remember working with Charlie Fennis on the front end, with Gail Alderman on the back end. And I have a documentary I did last year in 2015. I actually had Gail, after 52 years, he lives in Tip City, Ohio. He has a museum there. And we went around the Mustang that he has in his museum. And we talk about it. I say, remember this, remember that. And we were 30 years old at that time. I look back and I said, here's one person that came from a river town outside Venice as a woodworker. And I'm working on a team with a designer that came from Tip City, and his family had a nursery. farming.
Right, right, right.
And the two extreme points of the world got together and worked on this world icon. I think it's kind of cute to talk about that.
I loved that documentary, Giuliano, where you and Gail Halderman were talking and you were in the back of the car and you were talking about the taillights. That yes. is just classic how stuff comes together. Wow, that was just great.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Is part of the sculpture's mission is to be sure that you watched, you know, the overall length and the width of the car and the headroom? I mean, were you guys working on making sure that the dimensions that the engineers wanted came out in this final design?
Of course, that's primary, you know. You can do a sketch and make it look very glamorous, but when you hit reality, then realities are. The engine, I call it the horse collar, you know, where the radiator is.
Yeah.
So we had to put dowels to indicate that point in the clay. Let's say the roof, you know, we had the cowl, was because the cowl is a very vital point. It's at the bottom of the windshield.
Mm-hmm.
And that came from the Falcon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was based on the second generation of the Falcon, right?
Yeah, and that's why we were able to manufacture that in 18 months. Like even heard like Iacocca and Jay Leno show say, well, it was a facelift.
A facelift of the Falcon. That is a great line. I love that.
He said, I heard him say that not too long ago.
And that car sold 1 million units in 18 months when it was released.
Oh, yeah. I think they sold 300,000 or so by just the advertisement of it.
Wow.
That's the other great part of the program. The ability to sell what you make. They hit every possible media. I think they had the picture of it in three different major magazines at the same time. Time magazine, Life, and so on, you know. That was part of Lee Iacocca's expertise, is, you know, marketing, selling. And he was a great salesman. So when we talk about him with the father of the Mustang, is because without him, we would not have. Because he put his job on the line. If the thing did not sell, well, Mr. Ford, you know, say goodbye. You wasted me a lot of money.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, that car was introduced at the World's Fair 1964 in April in New York, and yes. That's why it was the 1964 and a half model.
Yeah, I always call it 64.
Yeah.
It's 64 and a half. That's another coup there, because usually the car, new models, are introduced in the fall. That's why it was introduced in the spring. And there was no one else introducing their model, so they got full attention.
How proud you must be to be out there 52 years, the car's still in production, you're going to Mustang clubs, you're speaking everywhere at 84 and a half years old. Wow, talk about reinventing yourself with something to be so proud about.
Yeah, it's really, I rediscovered the Mustang on the 50th anniversary. When I was honored with the Mustang Hero Award and a local Mustang club had a banquet honoring designers and engineers that worked in the 50 years of Mustang. So I was there right at the very beginning. And after the banquet, we had signing. Anything that people were about 500. I signed documents and things for about 2.5 hours.
Good for you.
Very many people would say, how did you do it? What was it like in that studio? Obviously, I didn't have much time to, you know, go into details. It's a long line of people.
Yeah.
So that gave me the idea to do a documentary. And then during the documentary, I discovered the passion for this machine. The 64 Mustang is now, there are clubs around the world. There are 180 or so in the United States. There are many family that I met. Some had one for each member They brought it over to one of the car shows. They said, oh my God, we even carted one over because we didn't want to drive it for you to sign. After I was in Florida at the time, and many car shows every week, more time than once a week. And I kept signing and signing and signing. And now when I go to car show, they open the hood and I see my signature all over the place.
And, you know, I love the documentary where you signed the dashboard of a woman's car. That was just classic.
Yes. I don't know if you want to keep this in a... Last summer here at the World Headquarters, they had 1,000 Mustang, you know, big show. They play my song there, you know, because I wrote a song I call Mustang Man.
Yeah.
I wrote the lyric, and then I had Billy Mack do the music in his group. And then, you know, they came over, and I signed autographs 2 hours in the morning and two in the afternoon. I said, this is such a passion, but it's even more than that. Because little kids, you know, they say, Mustang Man, here, sign my T-shirt, son. And one lady said, gee, sign my chest over here, you know.
Great stuff.
But it goes on and on. I mean, you know, I was at the groundbreaking ceremony in Concord, North Carolina, of the Mustang Owners Museum.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking ceremony. I was the keynote speaker there. And I brought some DVDs and CDs, you know, trying to offset my cost. And they bought everything. And the second day, again, at the ground, one guy came to me and said, do you have anything else I can buy from you? No, I don't. He says, how about your hat? So he brought the hat right off my head. And he said, sign it, and I'm going to do a stainless steel holder, put it on my IP, and it'll be there to every car show that I go. Then everybody came over and had their tags signed. And pretty soon, all these tags all around the lot, you know, it's a 4-acre lot. And it was very emotional to see my signature hanging from all these people's neck, you know.
So interesting. You know, one of the things that I was impressed about you when we had our pre-call, when we spent a whole bunch of time together, your message of overcoming obstacles and in the creation of this world icon, having had the tuberculosis of the bone and sculpting in the bar of soap, and then having the tenacity to say, what's that tower over there, and to create your own opportunities. And now to be so much a part of this incredible movement.
At this time, Carm, in my life, I look and say, you know, for the last year or 6 months, has been accelerating a lot, the interest in my story. The Mustang is a great story. But then people, after hearing me, they say, what about your story? You know, it's so inspirational. You know, it should be a movie. Yeah, I said, I wish.
It is, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but I want to rewind a little bit about what else you did with Ford. I believe you worked on the GT40?
Oh, yes, yes. GT40, Ford Motor Company was interested to buy Ferrari, and because Ferrari was in financial problem. So they were actively going through the process. I remember seeing some designer doing the logos of Ferrari Ford, you know, together. And I came down to the point that now it's time to sign the contract. And according to someone that was there, told me what happened is that Ferrari just came in and then looked at everybody and walked out. He changed his mind. And then when this man, Henry Ford II, said, well, let's see if we have the ability to really compete with Ferrari. And so we started with the clay model. And I worked a lot on the front end of it with Jean Bourdinet directly. He was the vice president of design. And he stood there by the hour and telling me, you know, move this way. And he said, I never saw a sketch. He said, you know, we had dimension to hold. And I remember working on my back to model the underpan. It was a great experience seeing that model go out of there in think I've gone through some shop in California, and they produced several, and they went to Le Mans, and they beat the Ferrari four times. So that I'm proud of.
So from the homeland, they beat a car from the homeland.
Yeah.
Wow. Great story. Yeah. Now, do people know why they call it the GT40? The 40 stands for what?
It's 40 inches off the ground. And so they give that, you know, GT40. Ultimately, Ford, when I had some rough time, had to sell the name. 50 years later, they did a new GT, they call it. They can't call it GT40, but they call it Ford GT. They went back to Le Mans and beat Ferrari again.
Great story.
50 years later.
So you retired from Ford, I believe, after 31 years, and then you created your own studio?
Well, no, I never had a studio. When I left Ford, I retired from Ford in 1988, things were changing in car design and developing the concepts, you know. So I started even there. First, another story that before I left, I like to talk about. In 85, Design Center, designers were looking at designing the car in the computer.
Right.
So I thought that, you know, it was time to look at how we would be making models to parallel the technology. And I convinced the management that we should have a separate studio for a small group of people dedicated to explore new way in model making and car design, away from time constraint. You know, project had to be done a certain time.
Right.
So this was just to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a lot of good work there. A studio we called 2000X. And incidentally, that's where they designed the computer, the GT, that just beat the Ferrari in that studio. Isn't that something?
Is that that's right?
Cool. Yeah, in that studio. They designed it in there. So anyhow, in that studio, my responsibility was to develop new techniques in model making. And I thought of a way to do it with a computer, a liquid polymer, and an ultraviolet light. And I called it at that time liquid to solid. And I still have the agendas in my archives. And at one point then I was told, you know, this idea is too wild. You get nothing but negative results. Just quit on it. Well, I went underground and I kept talking to different university about the idea. And I made a video, which I have on my website. It was like, you know, a great box, full size, I had in mind, that I would take the data from the computer and through the fusion or solidification of the liquid polymer, I would create a model just for reviews, you know. So I sent this to the University of Ottawa, and so I got a call back from them, and it says, you don't know what you have done. You have invented a technology that's been patented by 3D System in San Rafael, California. It was bittersweet, but I said, then I was right, wasn't I? The attorney Ford didn't think it was possible. Well, right now, that technology is used in an international spaceship. And I like to find that attorney and send him up there.
Oh, that's funny. Very, very good. So tell me what other vehicles you worked on or with other car companies.
Well, to finish up at Ford first.
Okay.
The Insan Mustang GTP is a race car.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with Jack Roush at the University of Maryland wind tunnel facility.
Okay, great.
And we reconnected with him, and he has that model in his museum in Livonia. And that's where I did the interview with him, which is in my documentary.
Great documentary.
Thank you. And so I left the Ford in 88. I was 56. I had a lot of energy left and a lot of ideas. But soon I found out that without the Ford Oval over my head, doors were not opening that easy, you know. And I just look at engineering now, body engineering. because all the designs, original concepts are done within the company. So there's no way that I could do that outside. I had no studio or anything. So I formed a company called Concepts International.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no facility and no employees. My goal was to use my ideas and materialize them into with other people's facility. In other words, I would act as a supplier, and that's what I did. My first job was to quote on the first generation of the Dodge Ram, the truck. And I got the job from Jeep and Truck Chrysler. It was Chrysler at that time. I bid against some of the large companies around the Detroit metro area. They quoted to do the job 3 months. I did it in 3.5 weeks. And that got me rolling. And for the following 20 years, I did so many models, you know, for wind tunnel models, ergonomic models, so many in the development of the car, where I could say that I could run a project from a clay concept all the way to engineering for manufacturing. I have that knowledge because I did it for a total of 50 years now. I mean, then. And during that time after Ford, I did work for several major companies and in Italy and in Germany and Korea, and with no facility and no employees. So I'm proud of that.
Very good. Wow.
I had no overhead and no payroll.
What a great story. It's almost, you know, they say the magic of the Mustang is young, spirited, joyful, a sense of freedom. And you seem to embody all of that.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you so much. And I enjoy what I'm doing now. And so I form another company called Icon Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal is to inspire, inform, and entertain. And the thing that I'm thinking of doing now, as I just did one in a penitentiary to the inmates, and they were very inspired. As a matter of fact, one of the inmates did a portrait of me.
Well, look, you sent me that copy, and it was so well done. Could we put that on my on your show notes page on my website?
Sure. It's not. If you think it's good, you're fine.
Well, it's not like it's good. I think it's all part of the story. And the part of the story is that you're part of the fabric of the American life when it comes to cars.
But I want to, I don't know if we have enough time here.
Please go ahead. I'm just so much enjoying this.
So that, you know, it was not too long ago. I was sitting in my car. I was thinking, you know, people find my story inspirational. Who could I help? And it came to me, the inmates that are trained to go out in life again and rebuild their life. And I thought maybe my story could inspire them when they go out, not to give up, you know, because look what I did with a bar of soap and a body cast, you know. And if you're healthy and walk around, you can certainly do good with your life. So I just Googled the Jackson Penitentiary, and I saw the name. It says Warden. I called. He answered the phone, and I told him what I would like to do. And he says, this is incredible. He says, you work on the original Mustang? I said, yes. Or he says, I have two Mustangs. And then we start, you know, conversing. And he said, I'm going to do this. I want you to come in and talk to the inmates about your life. He says, I never answered the phone. This time I answered the phone. To me, I believe in the force of destiny. I believe that also if you meet an obstacle, it can be an opportunity to do something else. You know, don't give up, because that could be just a change of direction.
Yeah, that's the spirit of your message.
Yeah, I just, you know, don't. Sometimes it could be a blessing. If when I was in that body cast, for example, I did not have TV. Had I had TV, I probably would have never carved that bar of soap.
Mm. Great point. Great point.
Don't fret over sometimes. It's things are uncomfortable, maybe there's a sign that an opportunity is coming.
You have a great quote. I'm going to say it, and then I'm going to ask you how it inspired you. Your great quote is, where the spirit is young, there is no calendar.
Well, you know, it probably came, these things come to me sometimes. I don't know why, but, you know, but I can only say that at my age, a lot of people, they talk about dying, you know, and they look at that calendar, say, how much time do I have left?
Yeah.
So they're actually dying before they're dead. They're killing their own spirit. So I thought, you know, if you keep your spirit young and you want to live every moment you have and inspire other people, you know, but mostly it's in answer to your question, I said, if the spirit is young, there is no calendar, meaning, you know, in itself is understandable, that if you look at the calendar every day, it brings you down.
Yeah.
So just don't look. If let's assume that we never had a calendar, we never would know how old we were.
That's right.
But knowing that you're 80, 90, 100, okay, it's, oh my God, it brings you down, I believe. So keep the spirit young and want to live every moment. And there's no calendar.
Giuliano, for you, 80s is the new 60.
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, man. Okay, so we were on the phone. We had just a wonderful opportunity to chat, you know, in our pre-call. And you said, hey, Carm, I have a 10-year business plan. And I just was rocked by that. So share with our listeners what you want to do in the next 10 years.
I talked about doing a film called The Room Above the Tavern, and that's where I was born, mm-hmm. in a tavern, a family tavern. A film that would be about my life, but also the story of the Mustang, my story involvement. So I laid it out, and I requested a Ford Motor Company licensing department. Their answer was, if you're going to do a film about your life, well, it includes a Mustang, then you can use the Ford Oval and the Mustang logo free and anything else you need.
Wow.
So to do a film the way I want to do it, it's not a documentary. It's a living document. I want to begin with the remodeling the 64 Mustang.
What a great concept. I love that.
And have actors, you know, like impersonating me and others.
Yeah.
And really show and well, film it, and then use certain portion of it. The blood and sweat, intrigue, and all the excitement that went into creating that. Because I lived with it and I can remember every moment of it. So that would be the goal, is to start from there and then cut off to my life story here, there, how I did this or did that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the goal. But I want to do a film where the distribution is possible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it has to be done by a large company where they already have distribution in place. So I'm hoping that by telling my story over and over again to many different way, different people, that someone might say, no, let's talk. Let's see what we can do with your story and go from there. That's my hope. The other hope would be to do a musical about the Mustang, you know, a Broadway musical.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you're a songwriter, so you can help there.
Well, I wrote the lyric, yeah, to one song.
I know. But, you know, when you told me that, and then I discovered you have a music room in your home, and you love to showcase singers,
yes.
And I heard this great opera being sung at your home, I realized where the connection to doing a Broadway musical was.
Yeah, well, it's true. So this weekend here, this Saturday, I'm featuring a friend of mine that I work with at Ford Motor Company, and he's a designer, and he just loves to sing. And recently he's been taking lessons from a world-renowned mezzo-soprano, Irina Mishura, and she will be here also. and a couple other artists. So I'm using my friends, you know, family, and we have this around the holidays. So he will be singing his beautiful arias and Neapolitan songs. But too often in the evening, during the cocktail hour, I'm having a couple dancing the Argentine tango. They will do two numbers, and they are the 2016 U.S. champions. They will come here Saturday.
You have connections to the arts. Amazing.
But my real dream right now, immediate dream. Okay, I did the penitentiary, you know.
Yeah.
So the warden there, that he says he will, with a picture he took, and do an article and then pass it along, the different penitentiary in Michigan. He gave me an award, which I don't know if you could see it, comes from the governor. It's about it's in leadership, you know, honoring me for leadership.
Excellent.
So with that, I would like to see if I can interest other people, other penitentiary. So I met this lady, this Mustanger, I call it. She's very much interested in what I'm doing. And so I found her. She's also a writer. So here's the idea. How do I continue to inspire people and help people? And when I help people, I also help myself. I filled my life, you know, all the way to the end.
Right.
By making people feel good and helping. I can't think of anything else to do now. With that in mind, I thought about doing my talk to a VA hospital.
What a great idea.
VA hospital. And with that in mind, I said, why not go through the country and do this? So this lady friend of mine suggested, what about Route 66? So she has now got a lineup of all the VA hospital along Route 66. And then hidden Mustang Club on the way.
Yeah.
And it take about maybe 6 weeks.
Wow.
And ultimately, Mr. Iacocca would let me say hello to him to end the trip.
Well, that would be great. Now, I guess all you need is a sponsor. You need some money to make it all happen. But your message, here's your message, is overcoming obstacles.
Yes, that's what it is. Yeah, exactly. You know, and I lived through it. I believe in the force of destiny. I think if you try hard enough.
I got this idea. Now, if everyone who bought a Mustang in the last 52 years would send you $1, you could make your film, you could do your Broadway musical, and you could do Route 66.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would be fantastic, but how do we set that up? I don't know.
Listen, there's all kinds of programs on the internet that would that are funding mechanisms.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. I want to talk to you about that off the air. I really do. And boy, we have spent so much time together working on our pre-call and then hooking up, making sure the technology worked. You're a pretty good geek, I have to tell you that, Giuliano. You have multiple computers in the house. You know what you're doing, and to be able to hook up like we did here, we're doing a video, we're doing the audio. This is great.
To me, I met you in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
There's another force of destiny there, believe me.
It is. I'm so happy to have met you. You know, we're both Italian, and I think that was probably the original connection that made it happen.
We're both Americans.
Yeah, we're both, you know, but the podcasting is about telling stories. And when I heard you tell your story, and then you agreed to come on and tell yours. There are so many people that are going to hear this. Now, I would say that just think of the people that are listening to this that own a Mustang and didn't realize the background, what it takes to build such an icon that it is. And, you know, hats off to you for all that you've done for the car industry and all that you're planning on doing.
Well, yes. What I did then, it was, you know, I was part of that team. Of course, they, you know, I was valued for my skills in developing a theme in clay. But that just happened. And I was paid for that. And, you know, it was part of my job.
Yeah.
But now, in the last year, I would say, after I was made Mustang Hero, it changed my life. And it made me think, I said, you know, what do I do? Do I just sit around and go to parties, do this and that, eat, be like a food processor or something, you know? And then I discovered that the enthusiasm for this machine and how happy people were to line up and get my name, I have something here that people enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to share it. And in the process of making people enjoy themselves, I enjoy myself too.
Yeah.
I like to see people succeed. My final goal is really talk about my message. Like my granddaughter said, you know, that she came with me and my son to the penitentiary. You know, she was there. And how proud she is to tell my story. And I think she got to know her grandfather now a lot more than before. And she talks about me. And it creates a joyful moment when you see and you hear your granddaughter say that.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on the show. I was inspired. I know our listeners are. And I guess, how can I sum it up to say that you're just a young, spirited, and joyful person at 84 that had their hands and their blood and their sweat and their tears in the original design of the Mustang. Wow.
Thank you. And you can say, there are no calendars around my house.
That's right. Where the spirit is young, there is no calendar. We should all grow up to be as spirited and as young at heart as you are.
But before you go, in 1 second.
Yeah.
On the Route 66.
Yeah.
My dream would be to take off from the Automotive Hall of Fame here in Detroit and go along the route and have people join me for short times as a caravan of Mustang going to the VA hospital.
So in each city, you'd have the caravan of Mustang owners. Great idea. Well, you know, this is a movement, and I don't doubt that you're going to pull this off.
What I need, Carm, is your advice and other people's advice how to organize, because this would be quite a trip, you know.
Yeah, it sure would be.
I left somebody drive, you know, with me and all that, but it takes some effort to put this together. And potentially make people aware in advance I'm coming through with this idea and what I'm doing. I need to organize that.
By the way, do you own any Mustangs?
Yeah, I have the anniversary Mustang, and a 5.0 is a beast.
You know, I can't even find an end to this podcast. It's so interesting. I love it. Did you ever meet Carroll Shelby?
Yes, I did. When he was inducted at the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I did the work on the Mustangs, the Shelby Mustangs addition to it were done at the Design Center for Motor Company.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the concepts. You know, we Design Center wanted to control, you know, what they would look like.
Yeah, so yeah, sure,
I remember working in certain addition for Shelby's cars.
And again, did you ever meet Steve McQueen?
No, I wish I could. I met Tom Yeager. He was friendly with him and Paul Newman. You know, they were the drivers. Tom Yeager beat the Corvette on the 65 Mustang R, they call it. I didn't meet.
You know, we could go on and on and on, and maybe we need to do part two one of these days. But otherwise, thank you just so much for being here.
I really want to say I appreciate you wanting to do this for me. And because if you do it for me, you will be doing it for many other people.
And I thank you very much.
Okay, this is final. Thank you.
Thank you.
And goodbye.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.